This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Science Weekly is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honor of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organization, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat. But Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/Earth Day this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
For the past 2 weeks, behind the scenes, negotiators, fueled in part, it would seem, by the infamous Scottish drink Iron Brew, were working on a draft text of the key decisions to come out of COP26. It contained a series of measures to build on what was agreed at COP21 in Paris in 2015, resetting the world's course towards the climate action so urgently required. The first draft was published on Wednesday and may be finalised today. May is a key word here because it needs the agreement of 197 different parties. It's the final sprint of a marathon fortnight. From The Guardian, I'm Madeline Finlay, and this is Science Weekly Daily. The final episode from COP26. Have we made any progress on saving the planet? I spoke to The Guardian's environment correspondent, Fiona Harvey, and environment editor, Damien Carrington, about what to make of it all and what might happen next. I started off by asking Damien about some of the most notable things to come out of the past 2 weeks.
Well, we're into the second week now, and the first week saw a lot of glitzy announcements around stopping deforestation by 2030, cutting methane, some action on coal. Some of those have slightly unravelled, as some of the countries seem to have said they weren't going to do what they signed up to. And there were some interesting scientific takes, so some that were quite optimistic based on 2050 net zero promises, suggesting we might be on track for 1.8 or 1.9. But then following that, on Tuesday, there was a report from Climate Action Tracker, which showed that based on the near term, which is what really matters, the near term 2030 pledges and action, we're actually on track for 2.4, which is pretty catastrophic. So that's probably the highlights. We've also had the draft text as well, the first draft text of the final decision, which we've been poring over.
And I wonder if you can kind of step through this draft agreement. I mean, it's only 7 pages long. What is it setting out to do?
So in 2015, the outcome of the Paris summit was a new treaty that set out these temperature goals for the first time and that every country in the world basically was bound to respect. We won't get an outcome like that this time. This isn't about writing a new treaty or a new agreement or anything like that. This is about clarifying some aspects of the 2015 Paris Agreement and about ensuring that we get fresh commitments under that agreement that will keep us within 1.5 degrees. Fresh commitments on emissions, fresh commitments on things like climate finance for poor countries. So if we get that, then that means that the Paris Agreement will be fulfilled, essentially. But it's really difficult to get that, and we may not get all of that here at this COP. All of these different issues are laid out in this document, and this document has legal force under the Paris Agreement. So whatever goes into that final text, that cover decision, as it's called, when COP President Alok Sharma brings down his gavel at the end, that is a legal document that everyone at this conference will have agreed to.
So, Damien, obviously things are going to change in the next couple of days, but were there things in this draft that you thought quite positive?
Yes, there were. So the bit around the need to cut emissions by how much, i.e. a half by 2030, which is pretty extraordinary given that emissions are actually still going up at the moment. And there was quite a strong focus on going for 1.5, which in the Paris Agreement is still only an ambition rather than a firm target. So all of that was really positive. And also, rather extraordinarily, for the first time ever in a COP decision, and there's been 26 of them, in this draft is a mention of the word fossil fuel, and it's to do with removing or ending fossil fuel subsidies and also phasing out coal. Now, whether that survives into the final agreement here in Glasgow, we'll have to wait and see. There'll certainly be some countries who are trying pretty hard to get that taken out.
I mean, it feels quite shocking that this is the first time it's been mentioned.
Well, it is, because, of course, you know, we've known for decades that fossil fuels are the principal cause of the climate crisis. But I think what it shows is that how difficult it is to get 197 countries to agree on anything. And that's how this whole process works. It's done by consensus. There's no voting. There's no, you know, compulsion from anybody. And so the problem is that that type of process often leads you towards the lowest common denominator.
So this draft will go through several iterations. So there are things in there that probably won't stay in. It will be mauled by countries in the next couple of days. It's already being mauled as we speak, and a new draft is in preparation. There are different interpretations within the draft at the moment of what various obligations mean, to do with all kinds of technical issues, from carbon trading to a thing called loss and damage. But the substance of the draft is what we should be looking for. And the key things that we need to look for in this draft is, does it do enough to keep 1.5 alive?
And Damien, what's been the reaction that you've seen to this version of the draft?
Well, it is just a draft, but the overall reaction seemed to be that it was quite strong on cutting emissions, and it seemed like the science had been taken on board in terms of the urgency of doing that. But what most observers saw was that there was a big, big gap in finance, and there's three tracks to that. One is $100 billion a year to poorer countries, which was promised in 2009 and still hasn't been delivered. That's for clean development, so they can develop their countries without going to coal and so on. There's a second track on adaptation, which is obviously preparing people for the impacts of climate change, which are already baked in: floods, wildfires, droughts, all sorts of disasters. And there's a third track, which is probably the most controversial of all of them, called loss and damage, and that's to do with rebuilding after climate disasters that cannot now be avoided and can't be adapted to either. And so most of the most vulnerable countries are very angry, really, that that hasn't made, you know, much bigger impression in the text.
And as well as some omissions, one of the things that struck me as I was looking through it was the use of words like urging, encouraging, inviting. You know, it seems like asking instead of telling. What should we make of this wording?
What you have to remember about this wording is that it's to be taken in the context of the Paris Agreement, which is a highly complex legal document, a major international treaty that binds 197 countries. So actually, although those terms might appear weak to the person in the street, actually in the context of the legal framework of the Paris Agreement, they are strong. They have a particular legal resonance within the treaty. So urging actually is as strong as you can get.
Damien, like Fiona said, this document is about to be mauled by the countries. I mean, with only a few days left, what's the mood in the blue zone right now?
Well, it depends who you are. Because obviously lots of different countries amongst the 197 that are here want a lot of different things. The lead negotiator, Archie Young, said today that one country had demanded that all the text about reducing emissions was taken out of the text completely, which of course won't happen, but it can show that there's a lot of action going on behind the scenes. I think it's always like this at this stage of the COP. You know, we've only got really a few hours to go, so there's a lot to play for, there's a lot of brinkmanship going on, and there's a lot of sleepless people, and we'll see how it turns out.
I have seen a couple of delegates asleep in the corridors over the past couple of days. And so, Fiona, what does happen in the last few hours of an event like this?
People argue over the fine details of the text, so every word is subject to an enormous degree of scrutiny. One of the difficult things is that no country wants to allow their bargaining chips to be taken out of play. So that means that really they want to keep all of the elements of the decision in play until the last minute. So rather than getting sort of, you know, what might appear to be a less complex passage sorted out, and then, you know, you can put that to one side and say, there we go, we've done that. It's very hard to do that, because if countries want to use that passage as a bargaining chip to get something else in another part of the text, then they need that to stay open. So that's part of the juggling act here that the presidency has to do, is to try and make progress across all fronts while not actually closing down any of the discussions, really. That's an incredibly hard thing to do.
A lot of people have already chalked this COP up to a failure. And Fiona, when we...
Well, they're idiots, frankly. And really, that's just not helpful. And, you know, that's the kind of stupid way of thinking that has got us into trouble before. Saying, oh, COP26 was a failure, doesn't help to move on with that process, actually. And it didn't help the last time that people called a major COP a failure in 2009 in Copenhagen, because in fact Copenhagen did produce an agreement which did produce progress on greenhouse gas emissions that was important, but the fact that so many people were lining up to trash it just meant that for the next few years after it there was no progress. Well, we can't afford to do that again.
How do you both feel now about the direction that things are headed after COP?
It's absolutely crucial that this COP sets out a way forward from Glasgow that stays within 1.5 degrees. A lot of progress has been made at this COP, because before the start of this COP, we didn't have lots of countries with long-term net zero targets. Now, we have 90% of countries have long-term net zero targets. Some are more credible than others, but at least once you've got such a target, it can be scrutinised and you can be held to it. Similarly, on targets for 2030, which are the crucial thing. When we were coming into this COP, the targets that countries already had in place would have taken us well over 3 degrees of warming. Now, according to Climate Action Tracker, we're somewhere around 2.4 degrees. It's not adequate yet, but it does represent quite a large degree of progress. So you have to look at it and say, well, progress has been made. It's not far enough. It's not fast enough. But how do we then move on from here? And so what this COP has to do is to take that seriously, the fact that this is the beginning, not the end, and show where we go from here. So coming back next year with new commitments and managing that process, looking forward to 2023, because 2023 is another important year under the Paris Agreement, because that's when you do this thing called the global stocktake. And what that means is that all of the commitments that countries have made have to be assessed in relation to the Paris goals.
And Damien, progress, not fast enough, not far enough, but taking us in the right direction. What are your thoughts on where we're going?
Like, of course, I agree with Fiona. It's a question of whether you track progress as relative or absolute, right? So the relative progress is good. You know, there's been plenty of countries coming forward, plenty of sectors of the economy making more pledges and taking action, and that's the relative progress. But in absolute terms, are we on track for that 1.5 world? No, we're not. You know, the climate crisis is a slow motion disaster, and our escape is going to be a slow motion escape, but it is about keeping up that momentum. And I think that one of the things perhaps that gets a little overlooked is the signal that these COPs can send to the wider world. So, for example, nobody's questioning the science, nobody's talking about, you know, climate change not being real, no one's talking about not having to reduce emissions. And out in the real world, you know, businesses and other people are going to start thinking, well, actually, you know, the future is looking pretty low carbon and green, so maybe investing in the coal mines or other dirty industries isn't such a good idea. And we've seen that, you know, in the renewable sector, that's grown very rapidly. It's now the cheapest form of electricity in two-thirds of the world, and soon it'll be the cheapest electricity you can get anywhere. But there's still a long way to go. There are sectors like food and farming, aviation, shipping, some heavy industries which are quite far behind. Concrete and steel are starting to move. But, you know, COPs like this, and as I say, the big message they send out from all the world leaders can be quite helpful in again, keeping up that momentum, which is absolutely essential, because, you know, one of the things we've noticed here at COP is people from all around the world, from poorer countries, indigenous peoples, people of colour, women have been strongly represented. All of these groups suffer disproportionately, and this is life and death for many of them, as Mia Motley said right at the beginning of the COP. So it's absolutely serious and absolutely crucial this momentum continues.
1.5 is what we need to survive. 2 degrees, yes, SG, is a death sentence for the people of Antigua and Barbuda, for the people of the Maldives, for the people of Dominica and Fiji, for the people of Kenya and Mozambique, and yes, for the people of Samoa and Barbados. We do not want that dreaded death sentence. And we've come here today to say, try harder, because our people, the climate army, the world, the planet, needs our actions now, not next year, not in the next decade. Thank you.
As we recorded, it was being reported that a new draft was going to emerge overnight. You can read all about that and all of our other brilliant COP coverage at theguardian.com. And that's it from Science Weekly here in Glasgow. To hear about the outcome of this crucial summit, check out our sister podcast, Today in Focus, next week. They'll be analysing the final text and discussing where we're headed next. We'll be back to our usual bi-weekly episodes on Tuesday, exploring why some people's sense of smell goes haywire after a COVID infection and whether it can ever go back to normal. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.
This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.